Welcome to Cottage Talk. I am Russ Goldman, and co-hosting with me today will be Max Cohen from Cottages Confidential and Scott Tanfield from Friends of Fulham. This episode, we'll be previewing the upcoming derby match for Fulham against Brentford at Griffin Park. Top of that, we have some very interesting topics to discuss in the Cottage Talk Roundtable to start the show. Before we do anything, I'll have to welcome both of my co-hosts back to the show. First, Mr. Tanfield, it's been a little while. How are you doing?
I'm very well, Russ. How are you?
I am well. I look forward to doing this show with you. Every time I've done a show with you, I just want you to know that I always get positive feedback on your time on Cottage Talk. So thank you for joining me again.
No worries.
Okay, excellent. Max, I always get positive feedback on you. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Russ. Always a pleasure to be on the show. Looking forward to a good full-on discussion today.
Yeah, well, listen, we have some very interesting topics to go through, along with obviously previewing the upcoming derby for Fulham against Brentford. But let's start here because this was just announced today. It's on the Fulham website, so I'm going to read directly from this article. Fulham FC submits Riverside plans. Fulham Football Club has today submitted an application to the London Borough of Hammersmith and Fulham Council for the redevelopment of the Riverside Stand at its historic Craven Cottage home. This application follows a period of consultation and open dialogue with residents, supporters, and many stakeholders with an interest in the project and local area. The club secured planning permission for its previous design in 2013. The new proposal commissioned by Fulham FC Chairman Mr. Shai Khan has incorporated a modern design that is sympathetic with the river and local area, best reflects the needs of the club, community, and neighborhood by delivering a wide range of benefits both now and for future generations. In addition to increasing the seating capacity of Craven Cottage, the club has sought to add amenities to help transform the Riverside Walkway into a world-class leisure destination, both on match days and non-match days. This new design will still allow the River Thames Walkway to be opened up, an aspect of the approved design in 2013, and will incorporate bars, restaurants, and lounges, all of which will be open for business throughout the year. The redevelopment will bring significant investments in the local community, adding new full-time jobs and further opportunities for employment. Alistair McIntosh, Fulham FC Chief Executive Officer, said, quote, everyone here at Fulham Football Club is incredibly excited to submit this application, and we are confident that the plans we have laid out will both upgrade the current stand and add new facilities that everyone in the community will be able to enjoy and appreciate. And there's also a picture on the Fulham website that you could check out what they're hoping that the stand will look like. All right, Scott, I'm going to start with you. We've obviously talked about this a great deal, but now steps are moving forward. What are your thoughts about this news?
It's good news. Have we heard it before? Yes. We've had it with, you know, the old sort of planning permission and everything else. I can see, obviously, the Khans wanting something sort of with their own stamp on it. And I can see why they want to change it to maybe sort of, you know, as I say, sort of blend in with kind of like the Riverside, and create sort of a different kind of, you know, sort of feel and factor about the club. And it's got to be right, I think, sort of building it moving forward. So it's good news, I think, for fans and the club. It's just, I think it's one of those ones now, Russ. I think, you know, it's been going on for a while now, and right. I think fans will not believe this until obviously a spade's put in the ground, you know, so.
Listen, Scott, I'm completely there with you before I go over to Max, because here locally we have a similar situation, plans for a Revolution Stadium that has been in the works. Talks have been going on for years and years and years, and nothing, and I mean nothing, has gone forward. So I understand why fans are nervous about this, because nothing's happened yet. Until you see construction, I understand why many will then believe that it's going to happen. But this is an important step in the process, though, Scott.
Yeah, and I agree. It's an important step. I was only there last night when I went to the Mickey Adams question and answers night that I had in McBride's. And obviously we walked into the ground when it was empty, you know, it was dark, and we come out and walked back round that sort of way from the riverside. And, we were just having a general chat between us as we left the ground, and we were talking about how good this would be, you know, if it was opened up. And, the ground deserves something like that, to be honest with you. I think it needs something new. It needs something fresh. Not that it's, you know, not a great ground as it is, but I'm the same. I just want to start work.
Exactly. I'm there with you, my friend. I've heard the talk for a very long period of time. I understand why Shad Khan wanted to put a stamp on it. That's great. Let's get it done now. Let's get it through, and hopefully everything progresses. And then, like you said, we see construction. Then we can really look forward to this redevelopment and its fruition, because that's what we all want to see. Max, what are your thoughts about all this?
Yeah, I definitely agree with what you guys have said about the fact that it is kind of dragging on for a long time. You know, the first plans were back in the 2013 stages. And then, of course, relegation happened and the club changed ownership and all of those things that, of course, can affect the planning process. So it has been a long wait. But, you know, each time I see the images getting released, I just get even more and more excited. They just look better and better each time. And it's actually really interesting. The photo they released on the Fulham website is taken from the perspective almost right where my seats were when I was at the cottage, right at the Johnny Haynes stand by the putt at the end. And it's just amazing to see what they envision this new stadium will look like based on what I'm so used to from that kind of vantage point. So that was really cool for me. But one thing I'd like to make, a point I'd like to make, is that this is going to substantially increase the capacity of the cottage at kind of one of our worst moments for attendance in recent years. Of course, when you're in the second division, you're not going to get as many fans as if you're in the Premier League. But still, we've had some pretty disappointing attendances quite recently, in my opinion, in terms of the Millwall match, which, I mean, it's a London derby. It's not one of our biggest derbies, but it's still one of them. And to have, you know, I think it was around 18,000 mark, you are kind of aiming for that 20,000 above for a big match like that. So the perfect place for the stadium would be in the Premier League. Hopefully we can just get there first.
Okay, excellent there, Max. Scott, back over to you, because Max talked about the drawing, what it's going to look like. What were your thoughts when you saw that today?
Yeah, I mean, I come home from work, I sat down, I started doing some more emails and bits and pieces. I see it flash up. I just thought it was rehashed information at first from previous, and I sort of went back to it and I sort of had a look. And you know, that picture Max was talking about where you can see sort of a vision sat with the cottage to your left sort of looking over what it would look at. And it seemed to be, I mean, for me, it seemed to be more softer than the original design. And I think what they're trying to get is an image that's kind of new, but it fits in with the surroundings that we've got, because there is only a certain amount we can do.
Sure.
You know, I'm with Max on this. I think, you know, I mean, Wolves will probably go up this season, benefit from changes that they've done, but they made that mistake by probably building a little bit too early, and Molineux being slightly empty in regards to the, you know, the construction they did there. And you know, I think we fall slightly in that category. But I'm going to push my neck out here and say for the club and where we are now, I don't think there's any time scales for it. I think once it's built, it's built. I've done a couple of corporate events this season, and I'll be honest with you, that Riverside, for where the club's going and what they're trying to put on, I don't think they can really cater for it. They do what they can, but I just think even as a championship club, they can start pushing other revenues through that sector. And, you know, for me, I think the club does need it now. I think it's something that's been talked about for too long. Yep. You know, the fans have, you know, been looking at plans and this and that, and, you know, I'd just like to see it now.
It needs to happen, Scott. At this point, there's been so much talk and plans have been made prior, like we're talking about the 2013 plans. Now it needs to go forward. So let's hope this happens and we can see the results of it. Let's hope everything goes through. All right, guys, let's move on. I have a bonus topic for you guys that you are not going to be aware of. So I'm just going to throw this onto the table with you guys. And it actually comes from an article from Ryan O'Donovan on Get West London. It comes from Savice's presser. I believe if there are quotes from the presser on the Fulham website, but it's also here in Ryan's article. It's entitled, Savice Jokanović reiterates David Button's choice of goal kick is his preferred style of play. So I'm just going to read directly from the article, and then I want to talk about it because it's something we've talked about a great deal. This is directly from Ryan's article. So Savice Jokanović has reiterated that David Button is playing the style that he wants Fulham to play. And if the keeper makes mistakes, it's down to him, not the player. The goalkeeper, who has enjoyed a good season so far, has come in for some criticism for some set of Fulham support for the amount of times he plays the ball short from goal kicks, which some believe puts the side under unwarranted pressure. However, Jokanović who has spoken before about how he wants Fulham to build attacks from the back, has reiterated ahead of the Brentford game that Button chooses a shorter pass because he wants him to. And if he makes any mistakes, then it's down to the manager, not the player. Button returns to Griffin Park on Saturday, where he spent 3 years, having kept his first clean sheet since August in the 1-0 win over Millwall. And his manager has backed him ahead of this game. This is a quote from Slavisa. Quote, "I know there exists a question about David Button, where we start our build-up with a short ball and try to find spare man with a play surrounding them. This is my order. I force him to do this, and I don't find any target man to play long balls because I don't believe we will win if I send a long ball for Rui Font, Cabano, Session, Ayite, or these kind of players. Our supporters can believe I want him to try and play from the back, and I understand we can make mistake, and I take the risk, and these are my mistake. If David Button missed some pass, it's because I make mistake, not because Button make mistake." Okay, very interesting quotes from Slavisa. Scott, I'll start with you. What are your thoughts about this? This is something that we've talked about a great deal on Cottage Talk, the style of play, playing the ball out from the back, and David Button's role. Slavisa's taking responsibility for this. What do you think about it?
I mean, I think for me, he's had to come out and defend the situation. And I've always said that it doesn't matter what kind of system you play. If you don't have the players to play it, it's never going to go well. You know, that is a system that Slavisa likes to play. I've always said it, that he likes to play a kind of a sweeper-keeper type situation where it's with their feet. You know, he did it at Watford with Gomez, and he's done it heavily at Fulham. But for me personally, you're only going to get that type of system right if you've got the right players. Is Button the best for the job? Probably not. Is Bettinelli the best at the job? Probably not. Out of the two, who's probably better with their feet? I'd probably say Button is, to be honest with you. But you know, there are sort of situations where Button does put us under awful pressure, and I don't believe it's deliberate. I just feel it's down to the capabilities of that individual. When I went to Millwall, I was watching him distribute the ball, and you could tell he's under orders to do it. But there was just times when he was sort of kicking a ball to sort of Sessegnon when he was under pressure, sort of, you know, jogging out or trotting out with a sort of a Millwall player over his shoulder. And I just thought to myself, doesn't need to go there, you know? Yeah, I mean, I think it's good he's come out and defended the situation because Djokanovic has probably put a lot of, you know, has made Button pick up a lot of stick for the fans, you know? But my, you know, my overall sort of opinion of it is you can only do that with the players that you've got, you know, so you're naturally going to get mistakes.
Listen, it's a great point all the way around. I could say points because I agree with you, Scott. You have to have the right players to play the way you want to play. Is David Button the right person to play this style? I don't know, but he is struggling with the situation. And are the other players able to play the way that Jokanović wants the team to play? Because they have to. Everyone has to be committed. And I talked about this on a prior show. You have to be all in. You have to play with confidence. You do, or you're going to play nervous the way that we've seen. You can't play nervous or a team is going to take advantage of that. You have to be confident. You have to go all in. And I found one thing interesting, Scott, I'm going to go back to, because in the quotes, he talks about playing the long ball to, he names all these different players. And I agree with him there because I don't know if that's the right solution. But this goes back to the whole thing. Is he doing the right thing? Playing this style and not looking for another way. He tells you that he doesn't believe just kicking the ball long is the right way, Scott.
No, I mean, I don't get me wrong. I wouldn't like to see a whole 90 minutes of it happening. But I think sometimes, I mean, whether you've got big forwards, you know, the Matt Smith type, or, you know, we haven't got Chris Martin type sort of forward right at the club anymore. I mean, as we know, Rui Fonte is not going to be that type of player. Neither is Cabano. Neither is any of our wingers, really. And I agree with him, yeah, that, you know, probably 9 times out of 10 that the ball is not going to end up there. But in situations when you are under pressure and you need to take that pressure off defenders or midfielders, then there's nothing going wrong with going long but then trying to sort of put it into channels, you know. We've seen it before where keepers go long and sort of, you know, wingers pick the ball up from deep in channels.
David Bettinelli did that pretty good last season, I remember.
Yeah, I mean, he tended to go a little bit longer. I mean, most of his went out, if I'm honest with you, Russ. I mean, I sat at one game in McBride's once, and I think he had about 9 attempts and 7 of them went out. I could see what he was trying to do.
Right.
But, you know, with a keeper that's good with their feet, I think you can go long if you're more accurate with your kicking. You don't have to sort of hit it up to, you know, like a number 9. I just think every time that you play the ball out from the back, the other side is going to be on top of you if that's your natural way of playing. And we found that more this season, that the ball comes out and all of a sudden it's press, and we find that we make mistakes.
Very good points there, Scott. Max, I want to bring you into this discussion. Scott brings up some great points. The one thing that I want to talk about with you along with all of this is that I'm glad that Scott mentioned this. I truly believe that the comments from Jokanović are to take the pressure off of Button because he is getting a lot of pressure. And this way, he's taking responsibility. He's trying to put it on himself, so maybe Button will relax more. I understand the philosophy behind it. But I also, like Scott, there's got to be a way that you could relieve the pressure in certain situations and kick it long directionally that, yes, you're not going to kick long balls to Rui Font, but maybe, like he said, to the wingers. I've seen them try to do that in the past to relieve the pressure. Does it have to be like this every single time when you play out from the back, especially when teams have figured it out and are putting you under severe pressure? So I just want your thoughts on all this situation and also how Jokanović is handling the media here.
Yeah, I think it's frustrating when a manager kind of insists on such a rigid interpretation of his tactics in this way. Obviously, there are going to be situations where it's better to play out of the back and have a slower build-up play. And I think probably the majority of situations are going to have that slower build-up play. I think that's probably the better way to go about playing, considering the players we have in the squad. And that being said, obviously, as you guys mentioned, there are going to be situations when you want to go more direct, when you might be chasing a lead or you want to just relieve pressure and you don't want to play around the back and invite danger, and teams have reacted to us and seen our reluctance to play it long, and they're going to pressure us an hour and a half because they know what's coming. So I think it really has to be situational. You can't have just one approach, which kind of frustrates me about Jokanović in the situation, because he's kind of saying, I've told Button to do this.
Yeah,
I've been kind of giving Button the responsibility to make decisions on what situation's best for long ball, as opposed to playing out of the back. So that's frustrating.
Max, it's a great point, because say, what if Button has it in his mind, you know what, I think I just need to kick it long. But in the back of his mind, he has Jokanović there saying, you can't do that. You have to play it this way. So he's taking that decision out of his mind. So he has to do it the way that Jokanović wants him to do it.
Yeah. And then another thing about the quotes that was interesting to me was that in the forward players he mentioned Font, Cabano, Sessegnon, Naite. The one player who we're thinking of, well, he might be better suited to long ball, Abubakar Kamara, wasn't really in his the top of his mind when he's discussing this. So that was kind of interesting for me that he obviously didn't. Kamara's been kind of in and out of the starting lineup, been out of it in recent weeks. I think that, don't know if you can read too much into that, but for me it seems that Jokanović is kind of making the point that Kamara isn't going to be his first choice necessarily in the majority of matches.
Okay, very interesting. Just a situation that it's going to continue to go on, because this is how Savica wants Fulham to play. So I guess we just have to deal with it, and hopefully the team will get better with these situations, because right now it makes me nervous every time I see David Button looking nervous, because he does at times, and other times he looks okay. So we're just going to have to continue to watch the situation, but it isn't going to change. This is how they're going to play. All right, guys, here are a couple more topics in the Cottage Talk Roundtable. Max, I'll start with you. A report on Sky Sports is that Fulham are in talks with Ryan Fredericks on a new deal as his current contract ends after this season. Thoughts on this? Would you give Ryan Fredericks a new deal?
Yeah, for sure. I think he's been one of our more consistent defenders. I think he's by far our first choice right back in the moment. And we don't really have a ready-made replacement for him as of now. I think Steven Sessegnon is going to be the understudy, and maybe in a year's time, maybe a couple months' time, he can maybe step forward and play more of a substitute role. But I think we definitely have to lock down Frederick's new contract, considering we've kind of seen what happens when your other when a fullback leaves a club in terms of Malone. It really can make a difference at the back. So I would definitely prioritize giving Frederick's a new contract.
Okay, excellent. And I tend to agree with that, but I just wanted to ask the question. Should he get one? I believe he should. You obviously second that. Scott, what are your thoughts on Ryan Frederick's?
Yeah, most definitely. I think he's one of the important senior members of that side now that I think needs to be given a contract, and one that, you know, should have been given one in the summer. I know there was complications there where I think Watford come. I mean, this is a problem we had by doing so well last season, that a lot of players then obviously, you know, thought, you know, slightly bigger than the club, they were looking at bigger opportunities, and why not? You know, if like Malone, if you can get a chance to play in the Premiership, you're going to take it. You know, the same with Frederick's, really. I think when Watford started sniffing around, I think contract talks had happened, but demands were a little bit high, you know. But it's nice to see that they've started renegotiating again. Hopefully they can come to something. You know, he's a young player. I think he's only still 24, isn't he, Frederick?
I think he's 25.
24, 25. So he's still relatively young. Yeah. I've always had the envision that he's been a bit older than that. But, I mean, at that age, it's kind of prime that we lock him down into a longer-term contract, maybe 3-4 years, take him up to that magical age stone. And then, once again, we hold all the cards there, you know?
A very good point there, Scott. All right, right back to you. We're going to talk about a player that we knew we'd be talking about teams being in for him because it's Ryan Sessegnon. So let's just talk about the speculation that Tottenham Hotspur have made Sessegnon one of their top targets in the January transfer window. Scott, this isn't a surprise. What are your thoughts on this? If you had to put a percentage on it, what percentage are you afraid that something could come out of this?
I mean, I'm always going to say it's 50-50 because you never know what the club's going to do.
Okay.
I mean, it becomes a bore fest with me. I mean, Tottenham Hotspur, one of my most, I wouldn't say hated clubs, but most despised clubs. I can't stand them. Every window that we get, it's always Tottenham Hotspur this, Tottenham Hotspur that, and it's just like, you know, just go away. Their fans bore me. You know, the club bores me. You know, their owner bores me. They just bore me to tears, and we get this every single season.
Every season.
You walk into a pub and you start talking about football, and a Spurs fan comes up to you and always takes it back to a Tottenham player. It's just so boring. You know, this whole scenario is with Ryan Sessegnon. I mean, yeah, don't get me wrong. I mean, he's going to be a sought-after player. I mean, it's not just going to be Tottenham. It's going to be United. It's going to be Arsenal. There's probably going to be some clubs in Europe that might be after him. Man City might come sniffing. Yeah, they're all going to be there. The problem that we got is, as being a small club that we are, and we need to push on, and, you know, with parachute payments running out next season and everything, we're going to need that big payment to fund the team. And the only thing that worries me is that asset is something that can do that. I think if the right money's offered, I think the club could sell. But from a player's perspective, I do honestly feel that he's a genuine Fulham lad. He's been with us since the ages of 8. And I think if he had his choice, he would stay at Fulham, personally.
It's a great view here, Scott, because whenever I've heard him talk, it seems like he loves the club. He started at the age of 8 with his brother. So that is an advantage that Fulham had, but I'm glad that you brought this up. Say Fulham don't get promoted this season, the parachute payments are done. You actually have to think about the business side of it, and he's a huge asset here. So I'm thinking you don't do this in January, but if for some reason, you know, you're not going up this year, then this summer, I think that's something that you have to consider from a business perspective, Scott, from just what you're saying. You could get a lot of money from Ryan Sessegnon. I don't want him to leave. But it might be a situation where the club might be forced to just for financial reasons.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree, Russ. And that's the only thing. But I think looking at the model of the club, I think not just with Sessegnon, but his brother coming through, you know, with the others that we've got there, like Fosse and stuff like that, I think you're going to find this is going to be a trend with Fulham Football Club that we're always going to try and go down the Southampton route. And I think you'll always find that we will be breeding an asset that we will be able to sell to fund the club. And that was one of the Khan's biggest things, wasn't it? You know, when I took over.
Good point, Scott. Max, over to you. Thoughts about the speculation with Ryan Sessegnon, like we're talking about, not unexpected. I don't see him leaving in January because I think Fulham we'll hold on to him. But this summer could be a different story. Thoughts about Spurs' interest in him? It happens every window with some of our players. And, of course, it's happening again with Sessegnon.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it really boils down to Dembele, Roberts, even Emerson Hyndman's situation. But for me, Sessegnon is a better talent and will be a better player than all of those players, without a doubt. So he's definitely in a different class than I think those players. But it's a similar situation, you know, when young players don't want Fulham in recent years and they go away, and then it's up to Sessegnon if he wants to, you know, languish on loan in the Scottish League, which I think is probably equivalent to League One in quality, and that might be being generous with him. Or you kind of want to go to Bournemouth and not really make any appearances in the experience of Hyndman. So I think for him, he'd be foolish to leave because, as you mentioned, this is a club he loves. Yep. Whenever a player is left for him in that situation, you can't – I mean, Moussa Dembele, possibly, but he's playing in the SPL. I mean, there's no real competition, in my opinion, there. So for me, I think all of them have kind of taken a career downturn since they left Fulham. Certainly Roberts has. I mean, his Man City thing has just been a big loan adventure. So I think Sessegnon has to look at the players who come before him and seen this is not the right route for me. Fulham is where I've grown up as a lad, and I think he realizes that. I do think he's a lot more Fulham loyal than those last couple of players that we saw over the past years. And it would just completely stunt his development. At 17 years old, I think he's shown amazing skill and determination to succeed in a league like the Championship. But I think a big part of that is he's been getting appearances week in, week out. He's a steady member of the team. He's getting experience. At Tottenham, there's simply no chance he's going to get the same experience or any other of these top clubs, United, Arsenal, a lot of them. It's just not going to work out as well for him. So if he wants to become one of the best players in the world, which I think he can do, he should stay at Fulham for the foreseeable future, at least for the next, I think, Fiorentina's contract at the minimum until 2020.
Listen, that's what I want. I definitely want him to stay. And if you hear him speak, and I've already talked about this, you could see the love that he has for Fulham Football Club. And but it just might be a situation, Max. We're just going to have to see where Fulham are financially, where they are and what league they're in. If they're still in the Championship, they're going to have to figure a way, because a player of his ability is going to command a huge amount of money. And if you're business, you have to look into it. I don't want them to sell him. I want them to stay at Fulham as long as they can keep him. But I think there might be that day where he has to leave. Like we're talking about, like Scott said, we could turn into a Southampton where we're got all these young players to a point, and then we're going to have to sell them. It might turn into that because we do have a great academy and the players are coming through. But if they get into the Premier League, things can change. So let's hope that Fulham can get back in the Premier League sooner than later. And the situation with Sessegnon could change in a positive manner for Fulham. But we're going to have to wait and see how this all plays out. But as always, there is speculation with him. All right, guys, before we go and preview this match, I want to talk about a subject that has come up a great deal on Cottage Talk lately, and that's the left-back position. Max, we're going to start with you. Do Fulham need a left-back? I'm going to say right now I was not on that bandwagon that we needed one in January, but if Slavisa Jokanović is not going to play Rafa Soares, I think we need a left-back.
Yeah, I mean, I agree, because I think it's clear to everyone now that Sessegnon's most effective position is attacking left position.
That's where he should be.
That's true. I mean, when the lad scores a hat trick, midweek match away to Sheffield United, the second best team in the league, why would you play him anywhere else? Is the question for me. It's like, it's a no-brainer. He excels there. That's where he's had. That's where he's been most effective for us. And frankly, at this stage, he's not meant to be a defender at the Championship level. I mean, that's clear. He's meant to be an attacking player. So don't play him out of position. He's one of our best players. Why would you hamper him and hold him back? So in that situation, he's not a left back for us in this moment. Rafa Soares, of course, a lot of fan hype about him on loan from one of Portugal's best sides. He's been in the under-21s, under-23s, in the development squad. He's not in the first team setup. So obviously that shows Jokanović doesn't have confidence in him. So I think that leaves us with really no choice, Ross. I agree with your reasoning, is that if Sessegnon is not a left back, which he's not, and as far as the reasonable one to assume replacement is not going to be trusted, then we need to bring someone in January to fill that gap.
that's why I'm bringing this up. Like Craig had said this to me, Coben, a few times. That we need a left back in January, and I was not going down there. I'm like, no, we don't, because I was thinking about the situation with Soares. But if he's not going to play Rafa Soares, I think you need one, because I think you need to put Ryan Sessegnon in the best position to succeed, where he plays to his strengths. That's a midfield where he can be very dangerous. He can play left back, but why not have him where he can help you more? And that's in midfield. So Scott, I want to go to you. I'm very disappointed, I'm going to be honest with you, that Rafa Soares has got into the team once. He's got in once as a substitute. So that's what leads me to feel that we need a left back in January. Nothing against Dennis Odoi. He can do a job, but I think we need someone better at left back, because I want to see Sessegnon in midfield. I want your thoughts. Do you agree with me that we need a left back in January?
I agree we need a left back. I agree we need probably another forward or two. I agree we need another centre-back. I agree we need another goalkeeper. I agree we still need the players that we should have signed in the summer, but we didn't. And that's a harsh fact of it, really. I mean, yep. We went out and signed an injured left-back in a season that we sold a decent one, and we wanted someone for immediate cover or replacement, and we didn't do that. We went out and brought somebody that had a serious sort of ligament issue with one of his ankles. And we all know that it's not just, the injury repairing itself. You've got fitness levels. From what I've heard, it's the case that he's not 100%, you know, up to full match fitness. He can only last 60 minutes, and that's no good for us. And like you say, you know, the only other options we got are Odoi, Ryan Sessegnon isn't a left back. So again, it's a situation that we put ourselves in. Yeah. Personally, we need another transfer window to sort it out. But no, I mean, Sessegnon isn't a left back. I don't know whether Djukanovic is deliberately doing that to try and mentor the player to make him physically strong as a kind of a winger and a defender, because he has to learn both traits. But sure. If you start doing that, then you're starting to mess around with possibly sort of losing games and points and stuff, you know. But yeah, no, I'm 100% there. We need a left back. We should have had one in the summer when we sold Malone, and the situation hasn't changed.
Very good point there, Scott. And I'm glad that we're talking about all the positions of need. And, you know, it's funny. I wasn't even thinking about goalkeeper. I can understand why you're saying that. But the other positions you talked about, center back, need a forward, need a goal scorer, Scott.
Yeah.
Bottom line, they need a goal scorer.
Yeah, I mean, we discussed this on that show. I think one of the most popular shows we've had in a while in regards to recruitment. And yep. You know, we've got it horribly wrong. We've tried to go out and be clever, and it seriously backfired. You know, it's kind of a situation. It's like, look what I've done, and they've done nothing. You know, they've done nothing to make the situation worse. And you know, now that certain people have gone, Djukanovic has come out, and he started to sort of be a little bit more vocal about the situation, and he's turning around and saying that he didn't get the support, and he's turning around that, you know, he didn't have the players, and he's having to do the best with what he's got. You know, that's where we are.
Yeah, I hear you there, Scott. All right, let's get into this preview of the Brentford match. And the way I like to start it is just to look at the stats that come from whoscored.com to see where both teams are in the league and see how they match up. And these are two footballing sides. I think the stats here are going to back that up. So I'm just going to read through several stats, and then we'll talk about it. Let's start with goals. Brentford are tied for eighth in the league with 28. Fulham are tied at 12th in the league at 25. Shots per game. This one actually surprised me. Brentford are first in the league at 18.1. Fulham are tied at seventh at 13.5. Possession. Brentford are tied at third with 55.4, and Fulham are second at 55.8. So we're similar there. Passing success. Brentford are seventh at 78.0. Fulham are first at 82.8. Crosses per game. Brentford are tied at 10th at 19. Fulham are tied at 16th at 17. Long balls. This actually surprised me as well with Brentford. They're tied at 8th in the league at 78, and Fulham are dead last at 57. However, short passes, Brentford are 6th at 398, and Fulham are 1st in short passes at 460. So very interesting stats. Max, I'm going to start with you. What stands out to you from this stats comparison between the two teams?
For me, it's the possession stats. As you mentioned, Jokanović said this in his presser, in that both teams prefer playing with the ball, and both teams want to dominate the other one. So he even said it's not going to be a typical championship match, which is an interesting approach. As you mentioned, the possession stats, both sides are right up there, as well as short passes. So it definitely should be a game that is easy on the eye, as Slavisa mentioned.
Okay, excellent. All right, Scott, I'm going to go to you. I'm just going to read some characteristics of Brentford, get your thoughts on them in just a second. I get these characteristics from whoscored.com, so this is what they have to say. On strengths, very strong at shooting from direct free kicks. I can back that up on what I watched on video. Attack and set pieces, very strong, and very strong at attacking down the wings. They are strong at creating long shot opportunities and creating scoring chances. Totally true about all those strengths. The weaknesses: finishing scoring chances, defending against long shots, defending set pieces, aerial duels, and avoiding individual errors. They're very weak at protecting the lead, as we saw Monday night. Their style of play: attempt through balls, often short passes, possession football, taking long shots, control the game in the opposition's half, attack through the middle, play the offside trap. They're not aggressive, and opponents do play aggressively against them. Just want to end with just telling you where both teams are in the league. Fulham are currently 12th with 6 victories, 8 draws, 5 losses. We've scored 25. We've given up 24, won a plus 1 goal differential, and are on 26 points. Brentford are 14th, 5 victories, 9 draws, 5 losses. They've scored 28. They've given up 26, and they're on a plus 2 goal differential and are 24 points. Okay, Scott. What are your thoughts of the information I share with you on Brentford? I have to tell you, basically everything that I just read to you was backed up on video, and what I watched the QPR match. So what are your thoughts about Brentford?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's another potential banana skin of a game. I think it's one that we can always come unstuck with, simply because of the way they and their fans approach it. As I said, to them, it's their cup final.
Exactly.
To us, it's a West London derby, but Brentford always seem to raise their game regardless, regardless of whether they've come off the back of a bad result or, like the QPR game. That's not going to matter in this. If I look at where both sides are this season, I would say we're both on probably a sort of an even playing keel at the moment. I don't think there's a lot between us, but I think Brentford kind of edge it just slightly a bit more in the attacking sense than us, if I'm honest. I think sort of midfield and quality sort of players, I think we've got the slight edge over them. I think this is going to be, it's going to be an awkward game if we kind of sit back against Brentford and let them play. With our defence, I think they'll just basically sort of bulldoze us in regards to pace and obviously like their quick 1-2 passing. But on the other hand, Brentford are a side that are weak at the back. Can be exposed, as we said, and as we see against Queen's Park Rangers. They're another side, a bit like us, that don't like it up them. So we're going to need to show a bit of physicality against Brentford. Bit of physicality, a bit of flair and a bit of direction. And we can possibly come away with some points here, I think. But if we play into their hands, it'll be game over.
Okay, excellent there. All right, Max, over to you. Let's talk about some Brentford players to watch. I'm going to name a few that really stood out for me. Like I mentioned, watching video and then watching matches. I've watched more than a few matches, but the most recent one, these players definitely stood out, and that was Canos, Lasse Vibe, and Ollie Watkins up front in their 4-3-3. And a player in midfield to look out for is Ryan Woods. He's actually very good. They have some good players that you need to be worried about. What are your thoughts about the players to watch from a Fulham perspective?
Yeah, I mean, the big one, of course, in that match against QPR was Lasse Vibe, scored those two crucial goals and looks a real handful up top. What I saw is if you give that lad an opportunity, he's going to take it. So we do tend to be a bit generous with our defending at times, so we have to be wary of that because Vibe looks to be quite the clinical finisher. Another player who stood out for me was Nico Yanaris for Brentford. He looked like a really pacey and dangerous midfielder for them. And yeah, you make a good point that they do have a decent side. They like to play good football. So it should be an even head-to-head match. I'm looking forward to it.
Okay, excellent. All right. All right, Scott, right back over to you. I want to mention this because we're going to be talking about key players for Fulham, and then in a little bit I'll be getting your starting 11. Savisa mentioned at his presser that players that are going to be assessed are again going to be Tim Ream and Kevin McDonald. I think both are key to this game. I think if they both play, we're going to be in good shape. But if either one can't play, I think it's going to affect us. Because if, say, Tim Ream doesn't play, well, then Dennis Odoi can't play at left back. You have to have Sessegnon at left back. I want to see Sessegnon in the midfield in this match, Scott. So I just want to mention that. And then Kevin McDonald, against a team like this that wants to control the play, I think he is someone that you need in this match. So before we talk about key players, I want to talk about these two players that they're assessing and their importance in this match against Brentford, if they can play.
Yeah, I mean, the big standout one there is Kevin McDonald. I mean, we're going to need someone in that midfield to allow Kearney to kind of do his job, really. Whether Johansson plays there as well. I like Norwood. He just doesn't have that little bit of bite about him. He's good going forward, but he's not really a physical player in that midfield. He's not a kind of a ball-holding type central midfielder, you know. So I think Kevin McDonald's going to be huge for us if he's out again. We struggled against Millwall, you know, against an organised side.
I think we missed him in that match, Scott.
Yeah, I think we did. I think we miss him in every game that we've had. I mean, you know, whoever masterminded the £2 million transfer of Kevin McDonald from Wolves needs a medal, to be honest with you.
Need their own statue
outside the ground, because you're never going to get a player like that again for that money. And it's just, you know, week in, week out, he's a diehard player for us. And when he's missed, you see it. And I think it's going to be important to this game. There's going to be sort of times where we're going to need to put a foot on the ball. And we're going to need to get a little bit physical with Brentford. I mean, two minds about Ream. I know that he's been an important player. I mean, for me this season, I think some of the blame's gone on Callas a lot of the time. But I don't think Ream's been as effective as he was last season. I think that he's had a few mistakes in him this year. Because we don't have that centre-back option, I would prefer an Odoi-type player there that's a little bit more kind of aggressive with their approach, a little bit more physical, you know, a little bit more sort of aerial. But like you say, if we play an Odoi, then obviously, naturally, Sessegnon has to come in at left-back, and I'm not a fan of that. So for this game, I would probably say I would probably welcome Tim Ream back for this game.
So would I, Scott, and that's why I wanted to bring up these two players, because I think that there's a domino effect. That's why I wanted to bring up Tim Ream and also McDonald. McDonald, obviously, for what he does, but with Ream, it can affect ultimately what happens with Ryan Sessegnon, because I want to see Ryan Sessegnon in midfield. If Tim Ream can't play, you're probably going to see Odoi there. And then that moves him back to left back. And against a team that's going to attack like Brentford, that wants to play football like us, I think you need pace and you need him in midfield. And I think if you don't have him, I think that's going to hurt us. That's why I'm going to be watching to see if Ream is going to be involved, because if he isn't, then we're going to see probably Ryan Sessegnon at left back. And that's not what I want to see against Brentford. I want to see him in midfield. So I just wanted to bring that up. Max, over to you. Key players for you in this game.
Yeah, for me, it has to be Ryan Sessegnon. I mean, we could play 10 Mark Fotheringhams and Ryan Sessegnon at left mid, and I'd be content. Just play him.
Max, do you agree with my assessment about his role?
Yeah, I do. He has to be in the attacking position, because if he's at left back, he'll be squandered. And we've seen it how in the away matches he can be so devastating on the break. You just cannot play him in defense for me anymore. So that's the biggest thing for me.
Okay, excellent. All right, Max, right back to you. What does Fulham need to do to win this match?
We just have to be more solid at the back, because if we get down early, if we give Lasaziba or one of their attackers an opportunity and they tuck it in, you know, first couple minutes, then, you know, the crowd might get on us. Players get a bit nervy. And we've seen how we can get thrashed by Brentford in past years, you know. A couple years ago, it was 4-1 at home. And then end of the 2015-16 season, we lost, 3-0 to them away. And they do have quite a good recent history against us. So we have to just conjure up last season's successes, be solid at the back. And then if Kearney and McDonald can be pulling the strings, I'm confident we can get 3 points.
Okay. And you just brought up one of the reasons why I'm going to be looking at that starting 11 to see if Kevin McDonald's involved, and I really hope that he is. Like I mentioned, he's going to be assessed, and hopefully both will be playing, because I think we could use these players against Brentford. All right, Scott, over to you. Give me your starting 11 for this match.
I mean, obviously, we remain with Button. If Ream's coming back, Callis Ream at the back, Fredericks, Odoi, McDonald, I would say Kearney Johansson, Sess out on the left, Ojo on the right.
Who do you have in the middle? I'm curious your thoughts on this, because I know how you feel about our players up front. So who would you go with?
What, sorry, up front or?
Oh, I'm sorry, with Ojo and Sessegnon.
Yeah, sorry, so Sessegnon out on the left, Ojo to the right, midfield, Kearney Johansson with McDonald. Up front, I don't know for this one. I think for the type, we've got no options, have we? We've literally got zero options when it comes to a striker. I mean, you might as well put Cabano or someone up there, I think. We need quick players to get into Brentford's defence. And I think if you're going to play someone like maybe Fonte up there, you know, we can slow things down a bit. I mean, I really am stuck with our forward line in this one.
Would you go with Cabano based on your theory here on how to play against Brentford?
Well, it's one of the things that you go with Cabano or you stick with Kamara, who, you know, for me has been sort of, you know, I mean, a game against Millwall, I mean, Kamara type player should have been very effective against Millwall, but he wasn't, you know, and it's kind of looking at what player's going to give you, you know, the best, you know, we need to score goals in this. Yeah, he's out, as we know. He was always an option that you could stick up top, maybe, just to get us a couple of goals. I'm going to stick my neck out, and I'm going to say that Fonte has to come good at some point. I'm going to stick him in, and I'm going to stick my neck out, and I reckon that he might score against Brentford.
Wow. I love it there, Scott. Okay, excellent. All right. All right, guys, it's time to go to predictions. Before I get your predictions, I'm going to go to the Cottage Talk Twitter page and also the Facebook page. Let's start with the Cottage Talk Twitter page. I had 118 votes. Win was at 57%. Draw was at 25%. And loss was at 18%. Okay, now I'm going to go to the Cottage Talk Facebook page. And I didn't have an option for draw. So a couple people mentioned draws. I will mention them. Gary Cooper says, can't see us winning, but can't see us losing either, so he's going 1-1. Yavor Alexiev actually went for 3-0 to Fulham. Steve Aldridge said 2-2 draw. So a couple of people that said draw. Win was at 92% and loss was at 8%, and that was out of 181 votes. Like I mentioned, draw was not an option on the Facebook page. All right, Max, over to you. Your prediction.
Yeah, I like that kind of only win draw. There's only win loss. You know, draw is not an option. I think it will be a win, though. I do agree with the majority. Fulham fans, you know, we're going to be propped up for this match. I don't know if you guys had a chance to watch the motivational video that Fulham tweeted out, but I think just show that instead of a pre-match team talk, you know, I don't even think the players can even understand Slavisa at most times. So just play that video. They should be fine. They'll be up for the match, you know. We sold out our away allocation. The Fulham face will be out in force, and I think we'll get the 2-0 win.
Okay, so you're going for a 2-0 victory. Yeah. All right, Mr. Tanfield, your prediction.
I've been thinking about this one a week. And a pessimist always am. I mean, looking at the last couple of games against Millwall and, you know, the 5-4 against Sheffield United, I just still don't think we're kind of where we're, you know, where we should be in regards to performances and, you know, sort of going out and beating teams like Brentford. I'm looking at this game with potential injuries still. And I think, you know, being at the Millwall game, we got away with murder in that way. They could have quite easily scored rather than hitting the post twice. And, you know, I just think that Brentford are probably going to be a little bit too much for us on the day. And I'm going to say, I think our little mini run is going to come to an end. I'm going to say 2-1 to Brentford.
Okay, 2-1 to Brentford for you. All right. Guys, I'm going to go right in between the two of you. I'm going to go for a draw. I know I shouldn't do that, but I'm going to go for a draw here. And it's funny because Scott, you made a great argument why Brentford can win this match. And Max, I understand why you're going for Fulham, but I'm going to go for the draw. I'm going to say it's going to be a 2-2 draw. I think it's going to be an open match that's going to see goals from both teams. So I'm going to say 2-2. And let me ask you, Scott, if they got a draw, would that be the worst result here? I'm going to predict a draw, but your thoughts, if they don't win this match, if they got a draw, would you be content with a draw against Brentford?
Yeah, no, I mean, don't get me wrong, Russ. I mean, I'm hoping I'm back here and I'm eating my words. I don't want us to lose, never want us to lose, but I'm just looking at it.
I know that.
I'm just looking at it from a practicality point of view. You know, and if I think I'll be ecstatic if we got a draw there. If we got a win, I'm out and I'm getting drunk. It's one of those kind of games, isn't it? It's you know, I just don't think we're at the top of our game at the moment, and I think it's a tricky place to go. Tight ground, fans are close. You know, they play us at our own game, and it's a game that we could get sort of outplayed in because of the type of game it is. But no, don't get me wrong. I think a draw for stability and to keep that unbeaten run going is key. My key point from the conversations we had before, Russ, is that Savita has got to use what he's got moving forward now until we at least get to January. You know, he's got to keep the momentum going. He's got to keep the confidence going. And what needs to happen is that once we get to that stage, if we're on a decent run, he needs to be sort of adding players that come in and have instant impact. And I'm hoping the club's working on that. And that's where I feel we can really start pushing on, you know, maybe making something this season that we've made a hash of. So
it's funny, and I'll end the show by asking you both this question, because Craig Coben said this to me, that for him, it's all about the January transfer window, Scott, that they have to get this right. We have discussed ad nauseum about the summer transfer window. For good reason, because unfortunately it hasn't worked out the way that we had hoped. No. But they have to get the January transfer window right. And honestly, they can't wait on that. They can't wait to the end of the window. They need to act quickly and decisively and get the players that we need, Scott. So yeah, it could really come down to the decisions that they make in January.
Yeah, I mean, they should be already be working. I mean, I'm not football owner, you know, football club owner. I'm not a coach. I'm not CEO of the club. But you know, in a situation like this, I'm hoping that the club is working on it already. But the problem we get, we all know that it's hard to buy players in January. You know, they're inflated prices, so we've got to be a little bit clever with it. But at the same time, we've got to make you know, an impact with who we bring in, and they've got to be players that will hit the ground running. Another thing that we've got to take into consideration, that to attract players to the club, we need to be up and around there competing. If we're not, then players ain't going to want to come.
It's a great point. That's why the end of this calendar year is important, because they need to be in position to attract the players that they want. It's a great point there, Scott. Over to you, Max. I'm going to give you the final word on the January transfer window. Do you agree with me, Scott, and then, of course, Craig Coben, who brought it to my attention, that it really is about the January transfer window, the players that we can potentially bring in to push us forward?
Yeah, certainly I agree, but I think in past years we haven't had that success in the January transfer window, honestly. I mean, the last one you could say was an unqualified success was Pogrebniak when he came. That's the only player that comes to mind immediately who has had that immediate impact.
That's going back a little well. Bit.
It is going back a little bit, but we have to think that it's never the best time, as Scott mentioned. Clubs are charging inflated prices. It's inconsistency. They're slotting in to a new team in a very short amount of time. So it's difficult for me. I think we have a good squad with us, I'll be honest. I think the squad has not yet gelled yet, but when they do gel, I think we're going to see the results in that situation. Okay. Because we have a good team. I think once Lavisa can – I think Refault will come good. I agree with you guys on that. He's had a frustrating time as of late. But once he starts scoring and starts becoming a bit more comfortable in English football, I think we will start to gel a bit, and we'll see some of the form we had towards the end of last season.
Okay, well, that's what I hope there, Max. I still think that they need impact players, but it's a good point by you. When's the last time it's happened? It's been a bit. So, but I think that they need to do whatever they can to find those players. It could be difficult because, as you guys talked about, the January transfer window is not an easy window, but they need to do whatever they can to upgrade this team and then push us over that line to be the team that they need to be for the second half of the season, because fans deserve it. the players deserve it that are out there right now. We all deserve the best possible team out on the pitch for Fulham Football Club. All right, guys. Great show. Fantastic show. Scott, thank you as always for joining me, my friend. You're welcome back anytime.
Yeah, always a pleasure, Russ.
Well, thank you very much there, my friend. Max, as always, great job.
Thank you, Russ. Good show. And I hope for the 3 points on the weekend.
I'm right there with you. All right. For Max Cohen of Cottagers Confidential and Scott Tanfield from Friends of Fulham, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you as always for listening to Cottage Talk.